Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we are learning Masechet Megillah. We find ourselves on Daf Chaf Zayin Amud Aleph, that's 27a, and we're basically right in the middle of the page, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, the 13th line down in the medium-wide lines. This series of recordings is a joint project of the OU Department of Synagogue Services, OU Torah, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. What we've been discussing is whether or not you can sell a Sefer Torah. Generally speaking, it is considered disrespectful to sell a Sefer Torah. And of course, once you've sold it, the only thing you can use it for would be to buy something of an equal level of holiness, which would be another Sefer Torah. So the original principle that we learned was that, or we were making the argument, that you cannot sell an old Sefer Torah in order to buy a new Sefer Torah. And we've been trying to test that theory and see if it's correct or not. So here we go. Tashma. This is the third attempt. The previous two were in the last recording. Tashma, come and learn. Manichin Sefer Torah al gabe Torah. You may lay a Torah scroll on top of another Torah scroll, because they are the same level of sanctity. V'Torah al gabe chumashin, and you can put a Torah scroll on top of a scroll that is only one volume of the Torah, because the Torah has a higher level of sanctity. V'chumashin, and a single Torah scroll of one book, al gabe neviim uktuvim, you can lay that on top of a scroll of the writing of the prophets or the writings. Aval, but you may not do it in the reverse. Lo neviim uktuvim al gabe chumashim, you cannot put a scroll of the prophets or the writings on top of a single volume chumash scroll, velo chumashin, and not a single volume scroll, al gabe Torah, on top of a Torah scroll that has all five books. So that sounds like Torahs are equal in that case. You can put a Torah on top of a Torah scroll. If you can put a Torah on top of a Torah scroll, then you ought to be able to sell a Sefer Torah in order to buy a Sefer Torah. It's not an exact parallel, but that is the idea. The Gemara pushes back on this and says, hanacha ka'amart. You're talking about placement, you know, putting a Torah scroll on top of another Torah scroll. Shiny hanacha, placement is different. Delo efshar, because it is impossible to do it in any other way. The Gemara is going to explain what's impossible about it. De'ilo temahachi, if you were not to say so, that it's possible to put a Torah scroll on top of a Torah scroll, michrach hechi karchinan, how could you ever roll up a Torah scroll? V'hakayativ dapa achevre. You have to put one segment on top of another segment because they're rolled up together. So part of the Torah is on top of the other part of the Torah. So in order to have a Torah scroll, you'll have to have some portions of it on top of other portions of it. So it's impossible to have a Torah scroll without that. Therefore, we say that it's possible to do it. Ella, however, kevan delo efshar, share. So since there's no other way to do it, it's impossible to have a Torah scroll without it, it becomes permitted. Hachanami, so too with placement, kevan delo efshar, since it is impossible any other way, share. Now, it's unclear what this means. Do you have to place Torah scrolls on top of Torah scrolls? Maybe if you have no room, but you could just build a bigger ark and then you don't have to do it. Art Scroll says in their elucidation, because it's difficult not to sometimes place Torah scrolls on top of Torah scrolls. Although, frankly, in our situations, we don't do that. You never see Torah scrolls stacked on top of Torah scrolls in modern synagogues. So it seems strange. The Nimuk Yosef interprets it to say, if it's impossible to store the Torah respectfully without any other way, then you could do it. But if it's possible to do it another way, then you should avoid it. In any case, that's a suggestion that's here. But in any the way the Gemara is using it is to say that placement is one thing. If you have to place it on a Torah, you can, but it doesn't teach us about selling one way or the other. So we go on to the next case. Here's the fourth attempt to try to prove whether or not you can sell an old Sefer Torah in order to buy a new Sefer Torah. Tashma, to Amar Rabba Bar Barchana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. We have a teaching in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Lo yimkor adam sefer Torah yashan, one may not sell an old sefer Torah, likach bo chadash, in order to purchase a new one. That's our case. And so Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says it's asur. So the Gemara responds, hatam, there, mishum pshi'uta. The reason that Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel forbids one from doing it is because of possible negligence. And we saw this earlier related to using materials from an old synagogue in order to build a new synagogue. We were concerned about pshiuta there, or in selling a synagogue in order to build a new one, that you might never get around to purchasing the new Sefer Torah or writing the new Sefer Torah, or in that other case, to building a new Beit Knesset. So we're concerned there that you'll be negligent and that you'll sell this Torah and then never get another Torah. Pshiuta. We're concerned because of pshiuta. Kika amrinan. What we are talking about here is kigon dichtiv. The Torah has already been written. Umanach liifruke, and it's just sitting there, ready to be taken out. And in that case, my, what is the halacha? Meaning, if we remove the issue of negligence, so that we're not afraid that you might not write another one, that new one's written already, it's ready to go, you just have to go pick it up, then is it still forbidden? If it's just a question of kedusha, is it permitted? Tashma, so come and listen. Damar Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Meir. Ein mochrin, so basically that was the fourth attempt to prove it, and we couldn't prove it, because in Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's case, the negligence issue is still there. If we remove the negligence issue, we still don't know what the answer is. So here's our fifth attempt. Ein mochrin sefer Torah, we have another teaching that you may not sell a sefer Torah, ela lilmod Torah vilisa isha, except to learn Torah and to marry a woman. In other words, we have a general principle that there are only two mitzvot that supersede the sanctity of the sefer Torah, and that is if you need to sell a Torah in order to have money to allow students to learn in yeshiva, whether it's kolelniks or younger children to study Torah, and in order to provide funds for someone to get married and then thereby fulfill the mitzvah, presumably of peru or vu, be fruitful and multiply. So shma mina, we want to learn from this, Torah b'Torah shapir dami. Torah for Torah is fine. That makes sense. Meaning, since you can sell a Torah in order to provide funds for someone to learn Torah, we might want to extrapolate from there that you can sell a Torah in order to buy a new Torah. After all, they are related ideas. However, the Gemara pushes back and says this is not 100% clear that you can make that extrapolation. Dilma shiny limud. Perhaps learning Torah is different than purchasing a Sefer Torah. Shehalimud mevi lidei maisa, because when someone is actually learning Torah, they are going to come then to do mitzvot. So there you have both the learning and the mitzvot. One could maybe argue that the whole idea of purchasing another Sefer Torah is in order for people to learn it, but you have an old Sefer Torah, so it's not exactly the same. In this case, you have to sell a Torah in order to get funds to allow someone to be in yeshiva. Without those funds, they wouldn't be able to be in yeshiva. Isha Nami, same thing about marrying a woman, but it quotes this pasuk from Yeshayahu, Lo tohu bira'ah, Hashem did not create the world to be desolate. Lashevet yitzara, in order to be inhabited, he formed it. So people are supposed to get married in order to inhabit the world with families and with children. So interesting, they do not use the proof text of Peru or Vu, which is an interesting question that's discussed by some Achronim. But it seems to indicate that it's only these two mitzvot that would apply. Aval Torah b'Torah, and if it's only these two mitzvot, then in order to purchase a Torah, it would not be permitted. So that also is an ambiguous claim. So now we're up to the sixth attempt to try to prove the answer. Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, Lo yimkor adam sefer Torah, a person should not sell a sefer Torah, af al pi she'eno tzarich lo, even though he doesn't or no longer needs it. And Rashi says this means that you have two Torahs. So if you have a Torah, so you already have a Torah that you can use, so your extra Torah, it's not like, oh, what do I need another Torah for? But you might want to use those funds for other communal purposes. After all, if you have a Torah, then you don't need it anymore. I mean, perhaps this, in a communal sense, would mean that you already have several Torahs. After all, we know that sometimes, like on Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh Chanukah, you need to have three Torahs, or else you have to roll Torah. So maybe once the community has three Torahs, the fourth Torah is not necessary, and they could sell it if they needed it. But this teaching says, even if it's you have enough Torahs to meet your needs, you still are not allowed to sell it because it impinges on the honor of the Sefer Torah. Yeter al kein, even more than this, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, that's the long abbreviation there, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel said, Afilu ein lo ma yochal, even if he has nothing to eat, umachar sefer Torah, and therefore he sells the sefer Torah in order to provide food, o bito, or he sells his daughter. Interesting that it connects here the selling of the Torah and the selling of the daughter. Eino roe simon bracha leolam, he will never see any sign of blessing from the proceeds of that sale. Now, there's two interesting things about it. First of all, if he's really starving and he's going to die, it would seem clear that you are able to sell the Torah, because pikuach nefesh would push it off. This is only if he is cannot provide for himself. He's subject to tzedakah, or he's only able to get enough food for the day, for that day, and he wants to, you know, set himself up in a better economic situation, that he can't do it. And also, there's a discussion about this formulation of that you won't see any blessing from it, whether or not that implies that it's asur, that's forbidden to do it, and therefore, since you do something that's forbidden, you will not profit from your sin, or if it means it's really not forbidden, it's just a really bad thing to do, and therefore, even though it's not exactly forbidden, you'll never see any siman bracha from it at all. And it could be read potentially in either way. That concludes the discussion of whether or not you can sell a Sefer Torah, and it becomes unclear what the conclusion of the Gemara is. The Rambam is extremely strict about this and says, basically, leans l'chumra on all of these things, that you cannot sell a Torah, an old Torah, by a new Torah, even if you have a Torah already, and even if you're not concerned about negligence, etc., etc. The only one that you could sell it for, which we learned here, is in order to provide funds for someone to learn Torah, or in order to provide funds for someone to get married. But there may be circumstances under which it is permitted. It's an interesting halachic topic, and a relevant halachic topic, about under what conditions, let's say a synagogue that's going out of business, whether or not it can sell its Sefer Torah in order to provide funds for the community or not. Okay, we continue on in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, V'chein b'motarehen. It says, and also with the additional proceeds. Meaning, our Mishnah says you can only sell something, if you sell something of a certain level of holiness, you can only use the money from that sale for something of an equal number of holiness. But let's say you sell a Sefer Torah for $50,000, or you sell a synagogue for $50,000, and you use $45,000 to buy another synagogue. So you have $5,000 left over. The question is, what is the story with that $5,000? So according to the Mishnah, that $5,000 still has the sanctity of the original shul. So it can, even though it's just the leftover money, it's the change, it still has to be used only for that level of holiness purchase. It can't be used for any other purchase. Amar Rava. Rava says, Loshna, he's going to limit this teaching. We didn't learn this teaching about the change, the extra money. Ela shemachru vehotiru. In a situation, as I described it, where you sold the holy object to buy something else and you have leftover money. Aval, however, gavu vehotiru mutar. But if you did it in another situation, you did a fundraising campaign for the sake of a holy object, like a capital campaign to build or purchase a new shul, and you raised more money than you needed to, so you purchased and built the whole shul, and you still have leftover money, does that money still have the level of holiness that you can only use it for a shul, or can you use it for any other purpose? So Rava says, mutar, it's permitted to use the leftover money from a capital campaign for other purposes. Obviously, that would be quite relevant. I mean, halavai for most shuls that they'd have extra money after they finish their capital campaign, but if they were, they could use it for any purposes related for communal needs. They wouldn't have to be limited by a high level of kedusha. Etve Abaye. Abaye asks on Rava, Bamedvarim Amurim. Let me limit Rava's limitation on the Mishnah. Or Rava limited the Mishnah's stringency to create a leniency. And Abaye is now going to limit the leniency. Bamedvarim Amurim. What is this speaking about? Shelo Hitnu. That they didn't make a tnai. They didn't make a condition. Sorry, Abaye is limiting the Mishnah's case, not Rava's case. Abaye is limiting the case in another way. He's saying the motar, the extra money, applies. The Gemara is going to discuss exactly what he means, but he's talking about the Mishnah. The money that is the extra money will depend, will continue to have its level of holiness if they didn't make a tanai. Aval hitnu, but if they made a special tanai when they sold the synagogue, that any leftover money could be used for any purpose, afilu l'duchsusya mutar, then they can use the extra money even for the duchsusya. As we'll see in a little bit later, the duchsusya was some kind of a a guy who rode on a horse. Either he was a town policeman who rode around the town on a horse, or he was like the Pony Express. He delivered messages for the government. But he was just a paid employee of a low level nature, and you could use the extra proceeds from the sale of a synagogue even to pay the salary of the horseman. Hechidami, the Gemara wants to understand exactly what Abaye is talking about. Ilema, I might say, shemachru vehotiru, that what Abaye is talking about is the situation where you sold the synagogue and you had extra money after you bought the new synagogue, right? Ki hitnu maihave. If they made a tanai, it doesn't matter, because the original money has the kedusha of the Beit HaKnesset still inheres in it because it was derived from the sale of the synagogue. Ella shegavu vehotiru. But in a situation similar to what Rava was saying, where they collected the money from the people and there was leftover money, then it wouldn't apply. Taima, the reason that it wouldn't apply is dehitnu, that they made a tanai. Halo hitnu, lo. But if they didn't make a tanai, lo. So according to the second version, it's what I originally said, I didn't mean to confuse you, but the original version is that he's limiting Rava. Rava says when they collect from the people, it wasn't that they sold a synagogue, but they did a capital campaign, then that money, the extra money, can be used for any purpose. Abaye says, that's true, but only in a situation where they made a tanai, where they made a condition that at the end of the capital campaign, at the end of the capital campaign, any leftover money will be applied to whatever purposes we think it should be applied to. That's the Hava Mina in the Gemara, but the Gemara is now going to reject that. Lo, no. Le'olam, in fact, shemachru vehotiru. Abaye's limitation even applies to a situation where they sold the synagogue, as long as they made a tanai at the beginning that when they sold the synagogue, any additional monies left over could be used for any purpose. It's legitimate. However, we need an additional condition. V'hachi ka'amar. Here's how you should read it. Bamedvarim mamurim. In what case are we talking about? Shelo hitnu, when they didn't make a tanai, they did not make a condition. Shiva Tove Ha'ir, B'ma'amad Anshi Ha'ir. The people that made the Tanai are the seven leaders of the town council who do so with the permission or in the presence of the people of the city. Aval, then if they didn't make a Tanai, then they can't use the extra money for any purpose other than a similar holy purpose. Aval hitnu shiva tove ha'ir, but if the seven town elders made such a tanai b'ma'amad anshei ha'ir with the permission or in the presence of the people of the city, afilu l'duchsusya, then even for the horseman, nami mutar, it's permitted. What's added here in this last stage is that it has to be the shiva tove ha'ir. It has to be the town council guys. It can't just be, let's say, the B'nai Ha'ir, but it has to actually be the seven town councils. So according to Abaye, there's one kind of leniency, and according to Rava, there's a different. According to Rava, anytime you do a capital campaign, the extra money, the motar, can be used for any purpose. According to Abaye, that is true as long as the Shiva Tove Ha'ir made it conditional at the beginning of the capital campaign that you could use those funds. But Abaye has an additional leniency that even a situation where you sold the synagogue, so in theory the additional proceeds should still have the kedusha of the original shul inherent in them. If they made a tanai before the sale, you can still use the additional funds for any purpose that you want to. So that's the conclusion of the Gemara here. But there's a postscript just about language. Amar le Abaye lehahu me rabbanan. Abaye said to a certain guy from among the rabbinical students or the rabbis, dahave misader matnita, who was memorizing mishnas. He was a person who was like what we call a ta. I mean, this is in an Amoraic era, but someone that we call a tana, who's someone who was made sure that they knew all of the Mishnahs by heart and in their proper order. So he was Misader Matnita Kamid Rav Sheshet. He was reciting Mishnahs in front of Rav Sheshet. Mishmi Alecha Me Rav Sheshet. Have you heard from Rav Sheshet my duchsusa, what a duchsusa is? Now I'm assuming Abaye knew what a duchsusa was, but he wanted to either test this guy from the Rabbanan or he wanted to get a precise definition from Rav Sheshet's student, as to what it meant. Amar le, so he said back to Abaye, Hachi Amar Rav Sheshet. This is what Rav Sheshet said is the definition of a duchsusya, Parsha Demata, a horseman of the city. Now the horseman of the city doesn't exactly explain what it is, and I saw two interpretations. One is that he is a courier, and the other is that he is a policeman, or that he, rides around the city patrolling for city order. So in any case, that's what it means, though. Amar Abaye, Abaye said, Hilkach, therefore, Hai Tzurba Merabanan, anybody who is among the Tzurba Merabanan, which means the rabbinic scholars, Deshamale Milta, who hears a certain teaching, Velo Yada Perusha, and doesn't know exactly what it means, Lishaile Kame, they should ask it, he should ask a question, among someone who is, Deshachiach Kame Rabanan, who is frequently studying and in the presence of more senior rabbis, delo efshar delo shmiale, because it's impossible that he never heard it, min gavra rabba, from a serious person, a great person. So in other words, if you don't know the exact meaning of a word, you should seek the explanation from someone who spent time among great rabbis, because certainly at some point or another that topic will have come up and they will know the proper interpretation. Since you weren't able to just Google it, you had to be able to seek out people that had that knowledge. Okay. So now I think we're going back actually all the way to the beginning of the chapter, and we're citing a number of teachings that are not directly related to a Torah and a synagogue, which is what we've been talking about, but that all begin with the topic of Bnei Ha'ir, the citizens of the city. So I think that's why this is here, even though it's not directly related to the previous sugya. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, Mishum Rabbi Meir, in the name of Rabbi Meir, Bnei Ha'ir, the citizens of the city, so this in this case means representatives of the city, official representatives, Shehalchu le'ir acheret, who go to another city, Upasku alehen tzedaka, and the city had given them a certain amount of charitable funds to distribute, so they had them on their persons. Notanin, they should give them to the people who are in the city that they travel to, meaning that while they're in this other city, they shouldn't keep them on their persons, they should deposit them with the people in the city that they're staying in. Uchashehin ba'in mevi'in ota imahen, and when they leave that city, they'll collect them, take them with them. Umefarnesin ba'aniyei iran, and then they'll use them in order to support the people of their own city. But just so as not to create a danger or to create a suspicion that they're using them for other purposes, when they're in another city, they should deposit them and then pick them up on their way out. Tanya Namihachi, we have a similar teaching in a Braita. Bnei ha'ir sheholchu le'ir acheret, the citizens of a city that went to another city, upasku alehen tzedaka, and they gave them a certain amount of tzedaka to distribute. Notnin, they should give it to the people of that city. And when they leave, they should take it with them. So all of that so far is exactly the same as what we said before. But it adds in the following teaching. V'yachid, if he's an individual, so he's not, we know that gabay tzedakah are never supposed to be less than two. But if he's an individual, shehalach li'ir acheret, upasku alav tzedakah, he goes to another city and has tzedakah on his person. Tinatein la'aniye ota ha'ir, let him give the tzedakah to the people of that city. He doesn't do this depositing and then collecting business. He should just give it to the people of the city that he's visiting. And that's the end of that story. Rav Huna, I'm two lines up from the bottom now. Rav Huna Gazar Ta'anita. Rav Huna decreed a Ta'anit. It seems like a whole district, a whole area, not just his city, but a whole area. He did a Ta'anit. Maybe they didn't have enough rain, and he established that they should fast and pray for rain. All legabe Rav Chana Bar Chanilai. Rav Chana Bar Chanilai went up to Rav Huna, where he was. V'chol b'nei matea, and all of the people from his city, ramu alayhu tzedaka, they gave up to them some tzedaka, v'yahavu, and he deposited it with Rav Huna while he was in his city. Kiba'u lemete, and when they were going to go back home to their place, amrule, they said to them, notva lan mar v'nizel unfarnes ba'niye matin. He said to him, give us the money, let Mar give us the money, and we will go and we'll support the people of our city with the funds. That's exactly what we said should happen. Amar Lahu, Rav Huna said back to them, Tanina, but we have learned, we have a teaching already, Bamedvar Mamurim, when does this apply? B'she'ein Sham Chever Ir, when there is no Chever Ir, when there isn't one overtowering rabbinic personality who's in charge of all of the tzedaka in a town. Aval yesham chaver ir, but if there is such a person, tinatein lechaver ir, you give it to that person. So hold on for a second. So in other words, Rav Huna is saying, even though you gave it to me in theory to hold, and then I'll give it back to you, so you could give it to the people of your town, but since I'm the chaver ir, I can take that money from you and distribute it as I see fit. Presumably to the people of his town. But then the Gemara adds, V'kol shekein de'aniye didi v'didchu alai semichi. And another argument is that the poor people who are in my town and in your town all depend on me. So it seems like Rav Huna was not only the chever ir of his particular town, but of the whole district. So Rav Chana bar Chanilai's town was in his district as well, and he had some authority to distribute tzedakah in his town as well. So he added that as an additional argument as to why he should keep the money and distribute it as he saw fit. The only question you could ask about it is maybe he should have told them that when they gave him the money in the beginning. Maybe he assumed they knew it already. But he certainly had the authority to take the money and to distribute it as he saw fit. That takes us all the way up to the Mishnah on Chav Zayin Amud Bet. We'll stop there and continue in our next recording.